Good morning, everybody. Good morning. I am certainly excited to be here, and I can't tell whether I'm excited to be speaking or excited for it to be done, but we'll see. Have you ever watched a baseball game, and you, either in person or on TV, and you saw a hitter hit a grand slam, and then the next batter comes up to bat, and you feel kind of sorry for him? There's nothing he can do that's going to measure up. I feel like I'm up here hitting right after Carl hits home run after home run on Sunday mornings. It's a hard act to follow. You got it. So I'm going to do my best. I did quite a bit of study this morning, more study than Carl is allowed to do because he preaches every week. But I gained a new appreciation for the story we're going to be looking at this morning out of Luke. It's a story that's so simple that we often use it in children's Bible stories. But it's also so deep and complex that if you let yourself feel the emotions of the people that are in the story, you can feel the pain and the joy and the different things they go through. So it's a parable out of Luke 15. And one of the things that I like to do when you see a parable is kind of go back and look at who Jesus was talking to and the setting that it was in. So we're going to start at the beginning of Luke 15 in the first two verses, and it says, "Now all the tax collectors and sinners were coming near to him to listen to him. Both the Pharisees and the scribes began to grumble, saying, 'This man receives sinners and eats with them.'" So a few things out of this. One, the scribes and the Pharisees were the religious leaders of the day, and they were not happy with the fact that Jesus was associating with tax collectors and sinners. I do find it ironic that the only brand of sinners that he specifically calls out are the tax collectors. The IRS was not popular 2,000 years ago either. But eating with somebody in this culture would have been acceptance, and still is in some cultures today. Breaking bread with somebody implies acceptance. And so they were unhappy with this, and Jesus told them three stories then, three parables. The first two are really short ones, and that's not what we're going to focus on, but we're going to read through them just to get a little bit of the scope of the chapter. So the first one's the lost sheep. So in response to them grumbling, he told them this parable, saying, "What man among you, if he had 100 sheep and lost one of them, does not leave the 99 in the open pasture and go after the one which is lost until he finds it? When he has found it, he lays it on his shoulders, rejoicing. And when he comes home, he calls together his friends and his neighbors, saying to them, 'Rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep which was lost.' I tell you that in the same way, there will be more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who need no repentance." He continues on with the second story. "Or what woman, if she has 10 silver coins and loses one coin..." Pause for a second. The 10 silver coins, a lot of Bible commentaries will tell you that it wasn't money. It was a special coin, a set of 10 that may be given to like a bride on her wedding day. So maybe like a necklace or a wedding band, some significance. So it was an important coin to her. So she has 10 silver coins and loses one, does not light a lamp and sweep the house and search carefully until she finds it. And when she found it, she calls together her friends and neighbors, saying, "Rejoice with me, I have found the coin which I had lost." In the same way, I tell you, there is joy in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents. So at this point, the Pharisees, the religious leaders, are very much on track with Jesus talking. So it's very reasonable that a shepherd would go after a lost sheep and rejoice when he finds it. It's also reasonable that a lady that lost a valuable coin to her would clean up the place and sweep up till she finds it, and then rejoice, call people together and rejoice in the fact that she found it. So that brings us to the parable that we're going to look at this morning. It starts in verse 11 of Luke 15. I'm going to read a little over half of it just to give you a little bit of a scope of the story, and then we're going to come back and kind of go through what he's saying here. So starting in verse 11, "And he said," continuing with his third story, "a man had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, 'Father, give me the share of the estate that falls to me.' So he divided his wealth between them, and not many days later, the younger son gathered everything together and went on a journey into a distant country. And there he squandered his estate with loose living. Now, when he had spent everything, a severe famine occurred in the country, and he began to be impoverished. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, and he sent him into his fields to feed swine. And he would have gladly filled his stomach with the pods that the swine were eating, and no one was giving anything to him. But when he came to his senses, he said, "How many of my father's hired men have more than enough bread? But I am dying here with hunger. I will get up and go to my father, and I will say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me as one of your hired men.' So he got up and came to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and felt compassion on him and ran and embraced him and kissed him. And the son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his slaves, 'Quickly, bring the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and sandals on his feet, and bring the fattened calf, kill it, and let us eat and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and has come to life again. He was lost and has been found.' And they began to celebrate." So we're going to go back to the beginning of this. Flip this back on here. Seem to be stuck there. I'm going forward. There we go. So going back to the beginning of this, the process of an inheritance. So basically what this younger son was asking for is his inheritance. And the process of the inheritance at this time was that the oldest son would get a double portion, and the younger son, in this case, it just says two sons, so the younger son would get a single portion. So the younger son was getting one-third of the father's estate, and the older son was getting two-thirds. This was very rarely done before the father was out of the picture, either by old age or by death. It was an unusual request. And it was also a difficult thing to do, because it wasn't just as simple as writing a check. It may have involved selling land or selling cattle or in some way getting it to assets that they can transfer over to the son. But the... There we go. But the younger son, he had a plan. It was a premeditated plan. And like so often the case with younger sons like this, they don't see the futility of their plan. His plan was to gather as much wealth as he possibly could and get as far away from authority as he can. And it looks so attractive to get away from authority, to run. It feels free to start running away from authority and the what you think is holding you down. You know, when you drive into Chicago and you see billboards that advertise nightclubs and own them, you rarely see, "Come squander your life here." And a movie poster at the bottom doesn't say, "May result in your mind being squandered and you'll become in bondage to your passions." It all looks so good. And running from authority and rebellion feels good for a season. But the way of the transgressor is hard. And that brings us to verse 14. In between the process of 13 into 14, we spent one-third of a family's estate. And he had spent everything. And then a severe famine occurred. A severe famine so often happens to prodigal sons. And why is that? Is it that God is trying to bring them to their senses? Or is it the result of a mom and dad back home praying and watching and waiting for their son to come to his senses? But this was the first step in the younger son realizing that he was lost. He became helpless. He was out of money, and a famine hit. And this is, a famine is an economic downturn in any society, but especially in a largely farming society. They had a lot of crops and cattle. This would have been a really bad time to be out of money in a far country. So he did what anybody would do. He went and found a job. I think one of the things we miss here about this, they send him into the fields to feed swine. we think, that's a dirty job. That's not a real nice job, but at least he's got work. But the Pharisees, remember, he's talking to the scribes and Pharisees about this. The Pharisees would have understood what a disgrace feeding pigs was for them. They view pigs as unclean animals. And so much so that some of the Orthodox Jews to this day will walk into somebody's house, and if they're going to have a meal, they'll ask, have these plates ever served pork? Has pork ever touched these plates? And if it did, they aren't going to eat there. And so that's the basis that they were working on when they heard that. So this was his second step. His second step was humiliation to figuring out that he was lost. And when I'm humiliated by life's circumstances, it's important that I allow it to have a purpose for good. Because humiliation by itself is just that. It doesn't do anything for you. His third step was that he became hungry. He became so hungry that he was thinking that the corn husk looked like a good thing to eat. And the other thing I noticed in this verse, it says, and no one was giving anything to him. Now, think with me, when a younger son, a prodigal son, goes into a far country with a lot of money to blow, he has a lot of friends. There's a lot of people that show up. People he's never seen before, but they're his friends now. And they were all over him. He had more friends than he knew what to do with. And then when he's in his time of need, nobody's around. And that's so often the case. The friends that you think that have your back, and then you hit rock bottom and there's nobody around. So in verse 17, he came to his senses. Or he came to the end of himself. It's only after we come to the end of ourselves or the end of our thinking that we're truly able to come back to the Father. Second part of that verse, he became homesick. He started thinking, you know, those hired men back at home, they have it better than I have here. I'm sitting in a pig pen feeding pigs. And the hired men, he started to get a proper realization of where he's at. You can't truly know your Savior until you realize that you're lost. The first step in the direction of repentance is to realize lostness. But just realizing your miserable state doesn't lead you to God. I know a little bit about being a prodigal. I was born into a good Christian family. I went to great Christian schools all my life. We had a godly church that I was there, not by choice of my own, but every time the doors were open, we were there. Dad made sure of that. But around my late teen years or early 20s, I decided that authority wasn't really for me, and started rebelling in every way I knew how to. I rebelled against my father. I rebelled against our church. I rebelled against any authority structure that was in place in my life. I didn't want anything to do with. Now, I didn't go into a far country and waste my money on prostitutes and loose living. But I was just as lost as the son in this story. And it wasn't until I realized that my thinking was lost that I could actually turn around. You see, not all prodigal sons have an outward public display of rebellion. But the father still sees them, sees their attitudes, and still is waiting for him to come home. So he came up with a new plan. He's going to go back. He's going to apologize to his father and say, I've sinned, and I'm no longer worthy to be your son. Just make me as one of your hired men. It's interesting, the terminology. So he started the story with, give me my inheritance, give me my money, give me my freedom, give me my wild living. And then he ends, when he switches around here, it's make me. Make me as one of your hired men. He still had some of that humility that he started learning when the money ran out. So now, verse 20, we see the father come back into the picture in the story. It did take a little effort on the son's part. He had to come to this realization and he had to go home. Do you think it was by accident that the father was the first one to see his son coming down the road when he was a long way off? He was used to watching for his son. And when he saw those broad shoulders that were a little more slumped now than before and that familiar walk coming down the road, he sat there on the porch rocker and he thought, it's good to have him coming back. I hope he's learned his lessons and we're going to have to make sure that he'll take responsibility for everything. That's not what we get out of this story. His first feeling was compassion. And not just a feeling of compassion. It says he ran, embraced him, and kissed him. And older men don't often run. This is not a, that's not a common thing that happens. In fact, if you see an older man running, it's either something really valuable or you better be following him. And add to that, he was probably wearing a robe, so he had to either hold the robe up as he was running or tuck it in his belt to get his legs moving. So he goes up to him and he embraces him and he kisses him. And the Greek word here that's used for kiss doesn't imply a very polite peck on the cheek. It implies keeping on kissing, kissing and kissing and making a real spectacle out of it. See, the father's emotions were not worried about what the neighbors were going to say. What are they going to say about me, you know, making this display on the roadside? No, this was out of the father's heart. So the son wiggles out of the embrace and says, I got to tell you something. I have something to say. And he says, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. And the father interrupts him. The son had more to say. The son wanted to say, make me as one of your servants. That's all I'm asking for. That's all I want to be. But the father interrupts him and he says to one of his slaves, he says, quickly bring out the best robe and put it on him. This guy was out of money and he was feeding pigs. His robes weren't looking too good. They were torn and tattered. This here restored dignity to his son. Bring out the best robe. And put a ring on his hand. A ring would signify authority. He was not only welcoming his son home to be in the house, he was restoring him to a son. He was giving him dignity, authority, and sandals on his feet. Sandals were not worn by the slaves and servants. It was only family members that were known to wear sandals. So what's wrong with this picture? The son doesn't get what he deserved. He wasted everything. And when he comes back, the father throws a party. What we don't get, I think, is that the parable is not about the lost son, but it's about, this part of the parable is about God's love. And God actually loves to save people. The love that the father displayed was not what the son deserved. The love was entirely a matter of grace. So let's review this younger son's journey. In the pig pen, he came to his senses. On the road, he said, I have sinned. And in the house, he received his wardrobe. We need to beware of gospels that offer people a robe and a ring in the pig pen. That leaves people in their sin. And it confuses them about who Jesus really is. The call of Christ says, I have sinned before heaven and in your sight, and I'm no longer worthy to be your son. And that's the point when we get our robe of righteousness. So we come to the end of Act 1, but there's another part of this parable. There's another character that we haven't talked about yet. And I'm going to read, starting in verse 25 is where it starts picking him up. It's the older brother. Continuing on in the story. Now his son was in the field, and when he came and approached the house, he heard music and dancing. And he summoned one of the servants and began to inquire what these things could be. And he said to him, your brother has come, and your father has killed the fattened calf, because he has received him back safe and sound. But he became angry and was not willing to go in. And his father came out and began pleading with him. But he answered and said to his father, look, for so many years I have been serving you, and I have never neglected a command of yours. And yet you have never given me a young goat so that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours came, who had devoured your wealth with prostitutes, you killed the fatted calf for him. And he said to him, son, you have always been with me, and all that is mine is yours. But we had to celebrate and rejoice, for this brother of yours was dead and has begun to live, and was lost and has been found. You notice the older son, or the older brother here, was dutifully doing what he was supposed to do, what his father wanted him to do. His father wanted him to be out in the field. He was going about it. He comes home, and he finds a party going on, and he gets the story about what's going on, and he was so angry. He had heard the rumors. News travels even from a far country when somebody's wasting that kind of estate. He had heard the rumors. And he was so upset that the father would just accept him back in. And the servant, the poor servant, told him about what's going on, and he was so mad. And the servant said, well, I better go tell the father. So he goes in, and the father's dancing and singing and celebrating, taps him on the shoulder and says, hey, your older boy isn't coming in. The father says, why not? He said, well, he's mad. So the father leaves the party and comes out on the porch. And he didn't come out and say, you belong in the house. Get in there. He came out and he pleaded with him. He came out and he said, what's going on? The older brother responds by accusing him of not recognizing his efforts or his so-called faithfulness. He said, all these years I've been serving you and you never neglected a command of yours. Serving and command, that's not father-son terminology. That's master-servant terminology. And the father responds again with, hey, you are here all the time and all that is mine is yours. But we had to celebrate when your brother who was dead has been brought back to life. But why was the brother angry? This didn't change anything about his status with the father. He was still the older son. He had a double share of the inheritance. But what it did reveal was the older son's true condition. The older son was living his life in what looked like the right way. He was continuing in all the things the father was requiring of him. But he assumed his self-righteous actions had some merit with the father. The older son was stuck out on a porch of merit, and he wasn't willing to accept his father's invitation into a family of mercy. See, both of these sons were prodigals. Prodigal means wasteful or reckless. The younger son was wasting the father's inheritance. The older son was wasting the father's mercy and grace by trusting his own merit. And he wasn't willing to forgive his brother. He wasn't willing to forgive the fact that his brother cost them status in the community because they're 2/3 of the operation that they were. He wasn't willing to forgive the fact that the brother went and did something that the older brother maybe would have enjoyed doing himself. You notice he says, you didn't even give me a young goat that I can celebrate with my friends. He was wanting some of the life that the younger son had lived. But it's only after we don't understand what we've been forgiven that we have trouble forgiving others. Remember in Matthew 18, the parable of the unforgiving servant. or the ungrateful servant, I believe it's called. It's where the servant who owes his master more money than he'll, a debt more money than he'll ever pay back in his lifetime. And the master eventually forgives him this debt. And he goes out and finds somebody who owes him just a little bit of money. And he throws him into debtor's prison. That servant didn't truly understand what he had just been forgiven. And that's what happens when we don't understand what God has forgiven us. We find it hard to forgive others. So who was the most lost of the two brothers? The reality is, it's not what the Pharisees, the answer to this was not what the Pharisees wanted to hear. But the reality is that there's not levels of lost in God's kingdom. You're either lost or you're saved. And no amount of religious observances is going to make you any less lost. The Pharisees had that down. They religious observances they did. They were slavish about all their things. They had a set of rules and they followed them to a T. But inwardly they were still separated from God. Sometimes I live my life like I believe that there's levels of loss. I start comparing myself to other people. I go to church, I read my Bible, I teach my children Bible stories, I help the poor, I visit the sick, and don't hear me say that those aren't good things. But if you think for a moment that your good living or your good deeds are going to mean something, are going to mean that you need less of God's forgiveness and less of God's grace, it's time to have a hard look at your situation. It might be time for a pig pen moment. The older brother looked at this party as a reward. What he didn't understand is that it wasn't a reward. The father says you need Jesus. Believe in Jesus, and when you have faith in Jesus, we're going to party. We're going to celebrate that. The party was an outflow of the father's emotions. It wasn't a reward for the son. Have you ever lost a small child? Not long term, I'm not talking about, but even short term. So I haven't done this as a parent yet, and I'm hoping I never go through it, but I witnessed it. I have 5 brothers. I come from a family of 6 boys, and there's no sisters. So for those of you who didn't know that, that explains some of what you were wondering about. Anyway, we were at a mall, and I don't remember if everybody was there or not, and it was really a busy time of the year, so I'm guessing it was around Christmas time. And one of my younger brothers wandered off in a store and was lost, and I don't know whether it was a few minutes or if it was 10 minutes or 20 minutes. I don't have a good mark for what it was, but it seemed like a really long time based on the panicked look on my mom's face. And when finally we found my younger brother, she wrapped him up in a big hug, tears of joy streaming down her face, and held on too long for a department store. You know, you're looking around, you're like, what's that? But this was her party moment. It's not that she loved me any less right at that moment. It's just she was celebrating the fact that my younger brother was lost and now he's found. And that's a picture of what happens in heaven when a soul comes back to the Father. All of heaven rejoices. So this older brother spirit is a sneaky one. It sneaks in a lot of places. I have a... Maybe if I'd leave this thing on, it would work better. Next slide, please. There we go. So I have a few things written down here. There's a lot more than I have. I have five ways that you can tell. One is, and we discussed this already, if I'm unable to forgive others, it's only after I truly understand forgiveness that I'll be able to forgive others. It works the other way also. If I don't understand God's forgiveness, I won't be able to forgive others. if I'm unable to share the joy in others, Mark Keentz, I'm going to use you as an illustration. So 2 weeks ago, Mark says, it's been 7 years, 7 year anniversary since I've cleaned from cocaine. And we all clap and celebrate that. And that's the proper response to an anniversary celebration like that. But if in my heart I'm clapping and I'm thinking, I haven't done cocaine for 37 years and nobody's clapping for me. That's an older brother spirit. And you can apply it to other things in your life. You can see other people celebrating something. And if your first thought is, boy, it would have been nice if I would have been able to do that. That's an older brother spirit sneaking up. When I find myself comparing my righteousness to others around me, we talked about that a little bit too. And this is an easy one to get caught up in. It's so easy to get your validation in your spiritual life by looking around and seeing, hey, I would not go to a movie like that. I mean, they posted that on Facebook and I would never see a movie like that. And you make yourself feel better about it. That's an older brother spirit. When I'm preoccupied with legalism, the Pharisees were just masters at this. They had a set of rules and they would judge people as how well they measure up. And it's easy to get caught up in that too. It comes back a little bit to comparing your righteousness to other people as well. You say, here's my set of rules, what's okay and not okay for me, and now I'm going to measure everybody else and see how they measure up to that. Then the last one I have up here is hypocrisy. Hypocrisy can mean a bunch of things, but one of the easiest explanations is pretending that you're more spiritual than you actually are. So the worship team can come up for a song I asked them to sing at the end here. I heard it said this week that if you're going to preach over 30 minutes, you better either be an angel in the pulpit or have angels in the pews. So I'm trying to live up to that. So if you're here this morning and you're a younger brother, and you're running away from authority, and you're wasting the Father's inheritance, take courage in the fact that the Father is waiting for you. He's watching. He's not giving up on you. And if you have a child, if you're a parent that has a child who's a prodigal, the Father understands your emotions. The Father has been through the same emotions you're feeling. Don't give up. Keep praying, keep watching, and keep waiting. And if you're here today and you have the older brother attitude, the Father's watching for you as well. He wants you to realize your need of a Savior. And He wants to celebrate when you come back home. It's time to realize that your self-righteousness isn't currency in God's kingdom. And God delights in saving self-righteous older brothers just as much as He delights in saving people out of Big Ben.